This man is no stranger to the airwaves, but he and I have not spoken before. Michael Van Straten is an osteopath, a naturopath, acupuncturist and nutritional consultant. I reckon I could do with his services on a lot of those levels. Michael, good evening. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to talk to you, Joe.
Yeah. All is well in your world?
It is well. We still have lots of lockdown restrictions. I'm a bit vulnerable, so I haven't hardly left the house since it all started.
Have you not?
Happily, we have a large garden, and it's been very sunny, so no great hardship, to be honest.
Well, that's okay then, that's not too bad. If you were mad for the travelling, then that might be a small issue for you, but glad that you're not. There are some stories going about in relation to antibiotics affecting the contraceptive pill. And these stories date back to the 1970s. And a new study shows that unintended pregnancies are 7 times more common after taking antibiotics. Is that real?
Yeah, it's a very concerning problem. And we've known about it in theory, because we've seen it happen, for many, many years now, as you say, since the 70s. Mm. But the British Medical Online Journal, the Science Review, has just published this very interesting paper where they've looked at a number of published studies. There is no very, very specific or very accurate information, except they can say with safety that any woman who is relying on the pill, the hormonal contraceptive pill, for protection, should take extra care whenever they're prescribed antibiotics, because there is a 7 times greater chance of an unplanned pregnancy, an unwanted pregnancy, just cropping up just like that. And nobody knows exactly why. There is all sorts of different information and different studies being done, and none of it's been very conclusive. Mm. But it's a real worry because, you know, antibiotics are still, in spite of all the bad publicity about over-prescribing, it still goes on. People get them like sweeties. They take them like sweeties. Doctors prescribe them like sweeties. It's an appalling risk for these poor women.
It is. And when you consider now that people probably are medicating far more than they used to, and as you say, this problem or these things links back to the 70s. But when people are actually medicating more now, there's probably even greater risk, and women that are on the contraceptive pill should probably be extra cautious.
Well, especially women who have medical reasons for not getting pregnant, for whom being pregnant again,
yes,
or for the first time could be a very serious risk. There are women who, for purely economic reasons, just can't afford to feed a second or a third or a fourth child.
Mm.
And for them, to suddenly find that they're pregnant again, it's a catastrophe. And particularly, you know, if you're faced with the moral dilemma of, do you have a termination or do you go through an unwanted pregnancy with unforeseen consequences?
Absolutely.
It's a horrible dilemma for the women.
Is this something that women might be already aware of or more conscious of? Because here you and I, two males, having a discussion about it, and maybe the women who are listening are going, sure, we knew that for years.
Well, to be honest, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think there is a great deal of ignorance about the interaction of all sorts of medicines when they interact together. People take a pill for this, a pill for that. Doctors prescribe them something for their blood pressure. Another doctor gives them something for their gout. Another doctor gives them something for their diabetes. And very often people are taking a whole sort of panoply of different pills, and nobody really understands the interrelationships. And there are a couple of famous textbooks about the interactions between drug intake and nutrient reactions, what they do to, you know, stop your body absorbing essential nutrients or make you absorb too much of some other nutrients. And to be honest, most doctors haven't got the slightest clue of many of these interactions. And, we've talked about the risks of over-prescribing antibiotics for years and years and years. And yet, by the time the doctors get round to reducing their prescriptions, the patients get round to demanding antibiotics. Every time their child gets a pimple on his bottom, they demand antibiotics for their child. And, you know, as one very eminent GP said to me many, many, many years ago, writing the prescription is the quickest way of terminating the consultation.
Yes, indeed. There was a GP friend of mine told me one time that he was talking to a patient who would be fairly elderly, an elderly man, and he had a pill for this and he had a pill for that and he had a pill for this other thing, and he was getting the prescription renewed, and he said to the doctor, he said, "Doctor, isn't it amazing?" He said that each one of them tablets knows exactly where to go in the body. There you go.
That's a lovely story. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the fact is, there was a fascinating study done at one of the London hospitals a few years ago. Oh, I think maybe 10 or 15 years now, in which they were so appalled about the number of different pills elderly patients were taking when they came into the hospital that they stopped giving them all the pills. And most of them got a great deal better within a couple of days.
There you go. Yep.
So,
yep,
you know,
that's it.
So it needs, women particularly need to be aware. And any woman that's listening to us should tell all her friends and their friends' friends and their daughters' friends that it is a risk. So if you are
just
on the
pill, aware. Yeah.
And you are prescribed antibiotics, be aware. You should take secondary precautions. Make sure, you know, you use a condom or abstain or anything you like, but take extra special precautions, because you never know what might happen, and you could wake up one morning suddenly and find that you're pregnant.
All right. Okie dokie. Anybody that knows me, Michael, will know that I love my grub. And there is very little I won't eat. In fact, there are two things that I won't eat. I can't eat. I've tried and it just can't happen. Liver is one of those, which is very good for you, I know. And the other is honey. Ugh. And we're going to talk about honey because Barbara Cartland was right about honey. New research, apparently in the British Medical Journal online, shows that honey is a better treatment for coughs than over-the-counter prescribed medicine, often antibiotics again.
Well, there we are. This follows on, really, very neatly from the antibiotic and pregnancy story, in that, yes, dear old Barbara Cartland, she was a wonderful old lady. She wrote a book many, many years ago called The Magic of Honey. And, you know, all the doctors laughed at her, thought she was a cranky old lady prescribing vitamin pills for everybody and that. But she was absolutely right about most of the things she said, and particularly about honey. We've learned over the years that there are types of honey, for instance, Manuka honey, which comes from the Manuka tree in New Zealand. That is an absolute cure for a lot of gastric illnesses, because it kills the nasty helicobacteria, which causes stomach ulcers and irritable bowel problems and all sorts. And plastic surgeons have used honey on wound healing for many years now.
Yeah.
And this latest story is, for me, fascinating. Do you know, what is the commonest reason that people are prescribed antibiotics?
Would it be just for the flu?
No. Well, they do, but it's useless because the flu is a virus. But the most often prescribed antibiotics are given to people who've got what's called an upper respiratory infection. Basically, a cough, a sore throat, blocked up sinuses, those sort of upper respiratory problems. And nearly all of those, firstly, are caused by viruses. So taking antibiotics is just a waste of time,
right,
a waste of money, but worst of all, adds to the risks of getting antibiotic resistance. And we are now facing a situation where we're looking at a worldwide catastrophe when there are fewer and fewer antibiotics which still work. And the drug companies are struggling to keep ahead of the bacteria, because they're very clever little so-and-sos, these bugs.
Yes.
They change overnight to improve their effectiveness. They develop a resistance to their antibiotics, so they don't work. But giving them to people who've got a cough is just, firstly, a waste of time. But secondly, this study shows, and they've looked at the results of thousands of different results of patients being treated, as well as all the, you know, the old wives' remedy, the best treatment for a cough is hot water, honey and lemon.
Yes.
And they've found absolutely what the study says, that doctors should be recommending honey as a treatment for these upper respiratory coughs and sniffles and whatever, way better than all the over-counter proprietary medicines, and hugely better because there is absolutely no risk with honey. The honey has no side effects. Well, you know, unless you actually hate it like you do, it might make you feel nauseous.
Yeah.
But it has no medical side effects, and it's cheap. It's readily available at every corner shop, and it's easy to use. And for most people, it's delicious. You know,
I can't see that happening until such time as Big Pharma goes into actually distributing honey.
Well, of course, they get there because you can buy sort of honey and glycerin,
you can.
throat tablets and all sorts, and they sort of play around the edges with honey. But why would you pay Big Pharma huge amounts of money for a capsule made of honey, which you can buy a whole jarful for the cost of like three pills of honey? It's like all these things. Big Pharma, if they see a profit, they'll go for it.
Absolutely.
But with, you know, coughs and colds and those sort of things, you don't need to. You could just literally suck a spoon of honey, add honey to a glass of hot water. Maybe this might make it a bit more palatable for a good full-blooded Irishman. Put a good shot of Irish whiskey, you know, good shot of Paddy's into a glass, top it up with hot water, juice of a lemon, and a good slug of honey, and then just sip it gently. Firstly, it's delicious, you feel good, and secondly, it really works. You know, they calculated that on average, you can shorten the duration of a cough by up to 2 days by using honey instead of antibiotics or commercial products over the counter or any sort of prescribed medicine. Shorter by 2 days just by taking a spoon of honey.
Excellent. All right.
Well, it's very interesting.
I shall hold my nose and swallow my pride the next time I get a cough. Hopefully it won't be for a long time. We're going to talk as well about another multi-billion dollar or euro industry, and that is that scientists have questioned the wisdom of blaming bad cholesterol as the main risk for heart disease. So the question we're going to ask is, what about now for the multi-billion pound low-fat industry, buying the margarines and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, this has been a real bogeyman for me for many years now. I've always questioned the whole concept of bad cholesterol being the sole cause of heart disease. And the idea of just taking a pill or swallowing a few spoons full of horrible, dreadful factory-made margarine. Margarine's not a food, it's an industrial chemical. You know?
Right.
But, well, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know.
You've ever seen inside a margarine factory, but it's an industrial chemical process. And these things, firstly, they don't do anything to change the way people eat. They don't do anything to improve people's eating habits. They just go on having, you know, three sausages, black pudding, and a great big pile of champ for breakfast, and take a pill, and all the cholesterol goes away, and you're never going to have a heart attack.
It's like asking for your large chip and your four burgers and two fish in the chip shop and a Diet Coke.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be honest with you, the Diet Coke has got so many horrible chemicals in it, artificial sweeteners, it's probably worse for your health than having an ordinary Coke with sugar in it. So they're both bad, but I think the ones are probably even worse. But this is a very interesting story. The food industry and Big Pharma jumped on the bandwagon very, very early on. And if you look round these days at the way people buy, in their billions of pounds worth, all of these low-fat foods, fat-reduced foods, special, you know, cholesterol-lowering margarines and drinks and yogurts and stuff, it is an enormous, enormous industry. And firstly, what people don't realize is, for argument's sake, the people that spend their lives searching out the skimmed milk in their supermarket don't realise that to be labelled as a low-fat food, food products have to have 5% or less fat in them than the high-fat products, right? But full-fat milk is 5% fat.
Okay.
And in with your 5% fat, you get vitamin D, you get minerals, you get much better absorption of calcium from your other foods, so it's much better for your bones, it's better for your whole metabolic system, and you are avoiding all these chemically processed things, which they spend huge amounts of money on, which you and I pay for if we're fool enough to believe it, just to lower your cholesterol. And whereas the truth is, if you look at the worldwide figures, countries where they eat a diet far higher in animal fats than we do in the UK, if that's possible. I mean, maybe we're not counting Scotland in this, but I mean, as far as the rest of the UK is concerned, you go to places like Crete is the famous example. The Cretan diet is the world's healthiest diet, but it's got things like salamis and sausages and pâtés and lots of cheese, but it's also got huge amounts of fruit and vegetables, huge amounts of olive oil, lots of really good quality whole grain cereals and bread and lentils and beans and all those really healthy, delicious foods that are traditional part of the Mediterranean diet. So eating better is a far more effective way of protecting yourself from heart disease than, you know, eating a diet full of absolute junk food, real junk food, and taking,
and drinking light milk,
and taking a sort of a cholesterol-lowering margarine or a cholesterol-lowering yogurt. Those things are a waste of time unless you really change the way you eat, the way you live. And, you know, we've seen all this discussion in the last few horrible weeks of the virus problem of people gaining weight, people living on more and more instant foods, quick foods, takeaway foods, because it's easy, get it delivered to your home, and you know, now you can, you know, you can get your burgers, your chips, your chicken nuggets, whatever you want, arrives at your doorstep in 15 minutes. So instead of turning to healthier eating, to simple, basic cooking, because I mean, most people don't cook anymore. The idea of cooking is a freezer and a microwave. The pinging, and of course, it's a sound you hear more and more these days, coming out of the kitchens in restaurants. More and more food is ready pinged, prepared, pre-frozen, and stuck in a microwave. So the skills of cooking are disappearing. And children don't learn it from their mothers because their mothers are too busy working. Everybody has two jobs these days.
Yep.
And they have to keep the family alive.
It's a vicious circle.
It's a vicious circle.
Indeed it is. Listening to you there talking about eating healthy and all that kind of stuff, it reminded me of being back home getting a lecture.
But you know, the really important thing, Ger, is that healthy eating is not a pain.
No, it's not actually. No, it's not.
People always say to me, well, it's all right for you. You could afford healthy food. But the fact is, the cheapest food is the simplest, healthiest, most delicious food.
It is, it is.
Look at the Italians. I mean, their food, the whole thing about Italian cooking is you have the best ingredients and you do very little to them and it all tastes wonderful and it's all healthy.
I'm hungry now.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I'm feeling a bit peckish myself.
And as it transpires, I have chicken and salad ready at home for my dinner tonight. So there you go.
Oh, what a good fellow you are. You're an example to us all.
Top of the class.
Why not? What's difficult or expensive or not delicious?
Actually, I was watching the snooker yesterday and I got some chicken thighs and I just put them into the oven and when they were ready I took them out. It was no bother. I had it last night as well and it was lovely. Yeah, so there's some left over for tonight. So happy days.
Delicious, delicious.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
That snooker was quite exciting, wasn't it?
Well, the two semi-finals definitely were. They were. That particular semi-final between Anthony McGill and Kyron Wilson.
Amazing.
even I had a knot in my stomach watching it. Wow.
Me too. I'm not a huge fan of snooker. But I'll tell you, if you've got a second, I'll tell you a funny story. Many years ago, where I was mostly in practice as an osteopath, I got involved in some sports promotions of various sorts. And one of the guys came to me one day, a journalist from the Wolverhampton Times, or the Wolverhampton Express, I think it was called.
Right.
He had this idea for putting snooker on the television, bearing in mind that it was in black and white in those days. There was no colour. And I said, you are bonkers. Who's going to watch snooker on a black and white television?
There you go.
And that show was Pot Black. And I could have had half of that.
Could you?
Pension for the rest of my life.
Oh, well, look, at least you're not like the guy that, you know, that turned down Bill Gates for his... Wasn't he doing a job for him and he offered him some shares in the company and he said, no, thanks very much. And he would have been a gazillionaire now if he had. But anyway.
Can you imagine?
There we are. Anyway, Michael Van Straten, osteopath, naturopath. Naturopath, is that how you pronounce it? Or naturopath?
That's right. Absolutely. Naturopath, yes.
Naturopath, acupuncturist and natural consultant. Thank you so much indeed. Your nutritional consultant. Thank you so much indeed for joining me. I've really enjoyed the chat. And Dave is back next week. So when you're talking again, it'll be with Dave.
Lovely. But it's lovely being talking to you too.
You too. Michael, mind yourself and stay healthy.
Enjoy your chicken.
Will do. Bye-bye. See ya.